Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yudam and Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara asks, Ibailuhu, Tchilat bi'akone, Osof bi'akone. Does the beginning of the intercourse, is that what generates the kinyan? Or is the end of the intercourse that creates the kinyan? Nafkamino. What is the difference? Why does it matter? Kagon sheheraba, that he only did hara, which is a partial bi'ah. Upashtayada v'kibla kiddushim me'acher. Then she accepted kiddushin from someone else. Inami, or the other possibility, the kohen gadol, the kakoni betula bebi'a. A kohen gadol is acquiring a woman as a betula bebi'a. There, he is required to marry a betula. The possibility is that she is no longer a betula by the time he exercises the kinyan or creates the kinyan on this woman. Mai, what's the din? Amar meimar mishmei derava. Anybody who has bia, his dat is on the completion of the bia. Here you have a very short gemara, and for a short gemara, it creates a tremendous amount of controversy. And that is because this gemara is directly against gemarot that we've learned throughout Yevamot, Ketubot, that the gemara already has a limud, that when it comes to bia, ha'ara, the partial penetration of the woman has the same din as gemar bia. And we learned that out. The Gemara has limudim for that from Parshat Arayot. And from that, the Gemara concludes that when it comes to bi'ah, hara is sufficient grounds for it to be called bi'ah. And why all of a sudden the Gemara here is talking about Gemar bi'ah? It's talking about something completely different than what we've concluded in other Gemarot. You can see that in the Tosafot. Tosafot brings the question right away. Tema by Abayivim to Oyofinan, Dishanikte the Bala Behara, that there is no question that a husband acquires his wife, Beharah, with partial penetration of the woman, you're done already. So what is the Gemara here speaking about? Gemar Biyah? It's introducing terminology that's almost no longer relevant once you've established that the Biyah, or the meaning of Biyah in the Torah, is Hara'ah. And over there, the Gemara has a machloket, what exactly Hara'ah is. But even within that machloket, nobody suggests that Gemar Biyah is even relevant anymore. Gemar Biyah is only something that we see by maybe by a Shifcha, Charufa, where there's a demand for complete bi'ah, but other than that, we don't see it. So how do you resolve or reconcile these gemarot? Over here, Tosafot brings numerous explanations from different rishonim. You can see here first, Vomer Ashba, Dechi Amrinan He'ara Koneh, Hainu B'Shelo Asa Ki Im Hera. If he only does He'ara, then it works. Uperesh Miyad. In that case, he didn't have in mind to do it with Gemar Biyah. So the Rashba provides the first answer. It's not the Rashba that we know as the Rishon. The Rashba, one of the Balei Tosafot. So here, he says that the reason that this Gemar is talking about Gemar Biyah is because it depends on the approach that the individual takes. If he's trying to acquire the woman through Hera, and he only performs Hera, it's done. The question is, if he doesn't use Hera, and he does not stop after Hera, then does Gemar Biyah Koneh or not? That's the Rashba's way to deal with the stira. Varivam, the Rivam, who is the brother of the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam, the third brother, the third child of Rabbeinu Meir, who's married to Rashi's daughter. So the third child, or probably the oldest child, is the Rivam. So the Rivam says, there is the had the nicknate Behara, Hainu Bimifaresh, Shirotzeliknot Behara. His solution is to say that you have to specify, you have to state it. If you want to be koneh through Hera, it'll work. If you state that, if you don't state that, then it goes after Gemar Biyah. Rabbeinu Tam, his brother, says, Teretz, Tachrei, Shinit Rabba Hera Kemar Biyah, Im Kein Komakom Shkazgir Biyah, Behera Kemar. Rabbeinu Tam comes up with an interesting solution to the problem and says, listen, you just told us that Hera and Biyah are synonymous. That's what we've learned now. That whenever the Torah or any there's a demand for bi'ah, you've told us now that that means hara. So when the Gemara's discussion over here about bi'ah, then you have to fill in the word hara instead of bi'ah. Anytime the Gemara uses the word bi'ah, no longer think in terms of bi'ah in general, you think in terms of hara. And therefore when it says here, tchilat bi'ah and sof bi'ah, it really means tchilat hara and sof hara. And that's the way the Rabbeinu Tam learns the Gemara in order to reconcile them that ain't ochanami. We're talking about hara here. And we're talking about whether it's tchilat hara or sof hara. V'achi kamar, tchilat hara koneh or sof hara koneh. And then he brings down here, Rabbeinu Nisim Gaon Teretz. So he brings down Rabbeinu Nisim Gaon, which is also the way that the Rif learns it, and one of the other Gaonim learns. That we're talking about two different time periods. When you're talking about Hara that's mentioned in Yevamot, that is post-Kiddushin. That is to create Nisuin. So if you're trying to generate Nisuin, then you only need Hara. On the other hand, here, when you're talking about Kiddushin, Kiddushin is something that requires full Biyah or completion of the Biyah. So it depends where you are in the stages of the marriage process. If you already have Kiddushin and you're just trying to generate Nisuin, Hara will suffice. On the other hand, when you want to start the process and generate Kiddushin to start with, then we're talking about Gemar Biyah instead of Hara. So here you see, again, Tosafot already brings four answers to deal with this issue. And obviously the difficulty of trying to reconcile this with the Gemara in Yevamot. In addition, the Nafka Mina of Kohen Gadol is very difficult. Because Kohen Gadol has to marry a Betula. And here the Gemara is saying, well, the Nafka Mina here, whether it's Tchilat Biyah, Sof Biyah, is whether she's still a Betula when he generates Kiddushin with her. The big problem is that a Kohen Gadol has to have Nisuin with a Betula, not just Kiddushin with a Betula. That means that, in this instance, even if she's nicknamed Betchilat Biyah, why does that help you? Still, by the time she's a Nisua, she needs to be a Betula. So we shouldn't even deal with that in different ways. One is to say that when we say Tchilat Biyah, it means literally Hara, and he never has the completion of the Biyah, and she remains a Betula. That's one possibility. Others suggest that, according to the one who says that, Biyah Osen Nisuin, so over here you have both Erusin and Nisuin done in one shot, or it's a case where he did the Nisuin before the Kiddushin, which is not so simple. Here the Ritva brings down a suggestion like that. We're going to see something similar in Rashi on the second half of today's daf, but he tries to solve the problem by reversing the order of the Nisuin and the Kiddushin. Or you have to say, if she becomes a Bi'ula through Kiddushin, and she remains the same status until Nisuin, then we deem her as if he acquired her while she was a Bi'ula. And the fact that the status change didn't happen between Kiddushin and Nisuin, therefore, she's fine, because the Kohen Gadol was the one who made her into a Be'ula. That means that when he began the process of marrying her, she was a Be'ula. So even though technically she's not a Be'ula, by the time he reaches Nisuin, he was the one who generated this change in status, and that's what it remains all the way through. On the other hand, if he engaged her when she was a Be'ula, and then she's a Be'ula by the time they get to Nisuin, then you might have a bigger issue or problem because her status changed in between. And when the status changes in between, then maybe by Nisuin it wouldn't work. That's one way to deal with it. Again, the other way to deal with it is to say that if he's Koneh, the woman with Chilat Biyah, then he also didn't do Gemar Biyah, like one of some of the suggestions that we had here in the Rishonim by Tosafot, that the Chilat Biyah is it, and that he's Poresh, and he stops. Yibayluhu, Biyah Nisuinosa, O Erusinosa. What happens when you do Kiddushin through Biyah? What is the extent or the power of that Biyah? Does it simply create Erusin, like any of the other methods of Kiddushin, of Kesef, Biyah, and Shtar? Kesef and Shtar just generate Kiddushin. You still need Chupa and Nisuin to finish off the marriage or consummate the marriage. Here, where you use such an intimate way to generate the Kiddushin, maybe it's a package deal that you get Erusin and Nisuin in one shot, or maybe you only get Erusin like the other methods, and now you still need to complete Nisuin. You still have to have Nisuin separate from this. So Nafka Mina, there is Nafka Mina to this, which is Lo Yorsha, Ula Tameila, Ula Afer Nidareha. The difference is whether she's married fully or she's not married fully. I mean that when a woman only has Kiddushin and not Nisuin, that changes the relationship with the husband. If she's fully married to the husband, he inherits her. He, if he's a Kohen, will be Mitameila if she passes away. And he has the right alone to be Mayfair Nidara. On the other hand, if she's an Arusa, he does not have a right to inherit her. He doesn't become Tamei for her if he's a Kohen and she passes away. Although Afair Nidara, he has to do in partnership with the father. Iyamart Nisuin Osa. On the other hand, if you say it makes it into Nisuin, Yorsha, then there will be Yusha. Mitameila, Umefair Nidara. And you'll be able to be Mayfair Nidareim alone. Viyamart Erusin Osa. So again, the Gemara goes through the two sides, which is, if it's Nisuin, he has all these entitlements, or all of these obligations, either way they want to look at it, he inherits her, he has to become Tamei to bury her, and he can nullify her Nidarim. If it's a erusin, he does not inherit her. She's not considered to be she'ero. He's not mitameila, because again, she's not she'ero. And Edom Efarnerea, because he's in partnership with the father. The father hasn't lost full control over the girl at that point. So Mai, what's the din? Amar Abaye, Tashma. Let us look at some of these situations. Av, Zakai bibito. Father has rights in his daughter, Bikidusha, Bikesef, Ubishtar, Ubibia. That the father has the right to marry off his daughter, and therefore he has the rights to the Kesef, Shtar, and Bia in marrying off his daughter. Bizakai bimitsiata. If his daughter finds something, then he gains ownership over that item. Umazeya deha, and her output, ubeafarat nidareha, and to nullify her nidarim, umikabelet gita, and he accepts her gita. Rashi over here says, what does that mean? He can accept the get on her behalf. It says, in girsha bala min erusin. If the husband divorced her from erusin, then he can receive the get, because he still has a certain amount of auspices over his daughter, and therefore he can receive the get on behalf of his daughter, implying, Rashi is saying, that if she was a nisua, the father could not accept the get on her behalf. And Tosfot already contemplates that issue and says, Ve'eshti stapek. Michol av lekabel get lebitok tana mishin niseit. Can he accept the get on behalf if she's already married, fully married? Ve'nira lemoria rabbeinu rabbi Yitzchak, shem niseit ein av yachol lekabel la get, v'afilu hi ktana. Even if she's a ktana, once she goes into full-fledged marriage, then the father has no longer has rights to accept the get on her behalf or to receive the get on her behalf. That's the way Rashi suggests over here. Tosafot is quoting a similar daya over here that it wouldn't work. In other places in Shas, we find that the Bali and Tosafot are suggest that it's possible that the father could, in the case of Nisuin, could accept the get on behalf of the daughter. But at least from here, it seems to be that it would only be from the Erusin. And Veinu Ochel Perot, Bichayeha, if she somehow inherits property that did not come through her father, that is the case where she inherits from her maternal grandfather, she inherits property, so therefore it doesn't go through the father, it goes directly to this granddaughter or to the daughter, and then he doesn't have a right to eat the perot or the output of that field. Niseit, if she gets married, yeter alav habaal. The habaal, the husband, has these rights that exceed the rights of the father. Shochel perot bechaya, then he eats perot during the lifetime of this girl, meaning that if she inherits property that doesn't go through her husband, but goes directly to her, that property, the husband has entitlement to the perot, to the output of that property, as long as they're married. Tani bia, viktani niseit. From this layout, it seems like you have, the father has these rights, and the husband has these rights. How does the husband's rights come into play? Niseit, if she has nisuin. Yet, it said in the beginning, av zakai bibito bikidusheha bikesef shtaru bia. So it says that you can have kidushin through kesef shtar and bia, and then it says afterwards there's nisuin. So that would separate between bia and nisuin, which is that there's bia, which is talking about what the father's rights are, and then nisuin, which talks about what the husband's rights are, which means that they would be separated or separate issues. Katani niseit asharo. You don't have to say that. You could say that niseit is modifying or qualifying the cases of kesef and shtar. Bia, you're right. Then ochanami bia would jump the line and get you all the way to nisuin. But kesef and shtar, you still have to explain what happens when she goes from being an arusa to a nisua. And niseit is modifying or qualifying those cases, not the case of bia. So I'm a Rava. Let's try to bring a proof from here. Tashma, bachlo shanim biyom echad. Once a young girl reaches the age of 3 years in one day, mitkadesh bibia, she can have kiddushin through bia. Bimbala yavam kana. If a yavam has bia with her, then he's koneher. I mean, that's the methodology by which a yavam acquires the yavama is through bia. If this girl is over the age of 3, then she's already considered to be a bat bia. If she's a bat bia, then bia can generate the acquisition. If her father married her off, her father accepted kiddushin on her behalf, if someone has a bia with her, then they're having an extramarital affair, and they would be deemed as if they had bia with a married woman. Umitamaid bo'ala. If she is a nida, she impacts the one who is bo'el her to be a bo'el nida, letamei mishkab tachton ke'elyon, that he affects the lower item like he affects the upper item. So that has to do with the fact that a nida has unique standing within Tumah, which is that she, when she comes into contact with things, makes them tamei tumat shiva. Not only does she make them tamei tumat shiva, even if a nida, for instance, is on a pile of mattresses, and she touches the top mattress, then the bottom mattress has the same status as the top mattress. And so even though technically she's not in direct contact with the lower mattress, she still affects it and makes it tamei, just like the top mattress is tamei. A boel nida, which is an individual who has bi'ah with a nida. Technically, all he has done is come into contact with the nida. So if he's come into contact with the nida, he should become tamei because the nida came into contact with him. And that should make him simply a tamei, tumat, erev, and that would have been it. The Torah says that a boel nida gets the same status as a nida. That the boel nida not doesn't become tamei because of his contact with the nida, but he basically takes on the properties of the nida, and he becomes tamei tumat shiva, that he has 7 days of tumah, and things that he touches also become tamei. Now Rashi notes that it's not exactly the same, because shoseh bo'olam moshav u'mishkav afilu eser matzot, aval lo liot ava tumah. The tamei adam v'kelim kimishkava shel nida atzma, el tamei ochlim u'mashkim kel yono shel zav. He says that the boel nida has the same status as a nida, which is that when he sleeps on the top mattress, on 10 mattresses, the top and bottom mattress are all the same level of tumah. The difference is that when a nida sleeps on a mattress, she makes the top mattress into an avatumah and the bottom mattress into an avatumah. When a boel nida sleeps on the top mattress, he makes it into a rishon l'tumah, and he makes the bottom mattress into a rishon l'tumah. So he's not as tamei as a nida completely, because he has slightly lower level. But the point being here that once she crosses over that threshold of 3 years in 1 day, if she has sightings of nida, we consider those sightings of nida to be tumat nida legamre. And that means if you have bi'ah with her, because bi'ah with her now is deemed to be real bi'ah, that's called bo'el nida. And a bo'el nida takes on this special status of tumah. But if we say the kohen, if she marries a kohen, ochelet bitruma, then she eats truma. As Rashi notes over here, the reason that Niseit the Kohen only after the age of 3 is entitled to Truma is because Pachod mi bat shnayim in chupata machilata ho vein biata biya. The failure of the biya is also a failure in chupa. Since there's no biya, there is no chupa, and that's why she's not entitled to eat Truma. On the other hand, the Tosafot in Yevamot gives an alternate reason, which is kevin shein a biata biya afu chuzer mishalcha itzalav. Since the bia is not a real bia, and this girl is so young, he sends her back home to grow up, and therefore there's a real chashash that she'll share truma. The truma will be shared with her family. Beikam ishum dula, and then you have a problem of ula, but also ikam ishum simpon. You also have a problem simpon because if she's not ruuya the bia, then simpon doesn't really apply because he doesn't really check her out. He doesn't really do the proper investigation that we say that en adam shote bekos elim kol bodko. Over here, he's not really shotev akos, so therefore he's not bodko. And therefore, we worry about both the problem of ula and simpon. But if she's ru'uya, the bi'ah, then he does a full check, and before he takes her into the chupah, and that's why there's no problem of simpon anymore, and he'll keep her in his house. And therefore, there won't be any problem of ula, because she ain't ru'uya the bi'ah, lo bodakla. Because when she's not ru'uya the bi'ah, he doesn't do a bdikah. And that's what the Tosfot in Yevamot suggests. The issue over here is not like Rashi, which the failure of the bi'ah is a failure in the Nisuin, but rather the failure to have bi'ah leads to the problem still being extant. The issues of simpon and ula are still there when she's less than 3 years old. She's most likely going to end up back in her father's house. And also, he never really checks her out, so you can't say that we've overcome the issue of simpon or that chupar nisuin basically are an acceptance of that which is there, because in this case they aren't an acceptance, because there was no bi'ah. Im ba'aleh achad mikol arayot, if one of the arayot, any of the illicit relationships mentioned in the Torah, sleeps with her, mumutim al yada, they will be put to death because of her. V'hi p'turah, she's obviously p'turah or exempt because she is a minor. Im ba'aleh achad min apsulim, if anybody who would make her pasul de kuna sleeps with her, pasla mina kuna, they ruin her for the kuna, because after the age of 3 years and 1 day, bi'ah is considered to be bi'ah with such a girl. So here you have, again, tani bi'ah, viktani niseit. Over here you have both aspects here. It says, If you have bi'ah with her, which is mitkadeshet bi'bi'ah, that was the first thing mentioned in this grouping here, bat shloshanim b'yom echad, mitkadeshet bi'bi'ah, she has kiddushin 3 bi'ah. Then the Mishnah later on mentions, oh, im niseit, if she gets married, she has consummation of marriage, she can eat truma. So again here, you see a separation between the kiddushin generated by the bi'ah, and nisuin is mentioned as a completely separate category, which is k'tani bi'ah, v'k'tani niseit. It writes bi'ah and nisuin as totally separate entities, implying that bi'ah does not create the nisuin. It says, hachi kamar, ihani nisuin, dekoein ninhu, ochele bitruah. No, you read it wrong. It doesn't mean if she has nisuin with the kohen. It means that if these nisuin, meaning the bi'ah that she had to generate the kiddushin, that generates also nisuin, if she happens to have that with the kohen, it will entitle her to truma. Then she's ochele bitruma. It's not to say that she had bi'ah and kiddushin, and now she's having nisuin. It's just saying that if she had this kiddushin with the kohen, then it will also result in nisuin. And nisuin for a kohen means she gets an extra benefit, which is she can eat truma. Tosfot over here asks, why does it have to bring here two different things down? It brings down that if she is married and someone sleeps with her, then you're chayav eishadish. And then afterwards it says, achad mikol harayot shebetorah, if you sleep with any of the illicit relationships in the Torah, you're also chayav mita. Isn't eishadish one of the harayot shebetorah? So why does it segregate eishadish from the other harayot? I mean, they're all in the same group, they're all illicit relationships, and if you're chayav for harayot, you're chayav for eishadish. And if you're chayav eishadish, you're chayav arayot. Why does the right here split them into two different categories? Tosafot over here suggests, "Achein imra lefareish the chayav alav mishum eishadish benim bala yavam ben eishadish to almakai the chiddush avikai name ayim bala yavam." He says that the chiddush veishadish is that when the yavam has bi'ah with her, she gains the status of a full-fledged eishadish. He says that's what the chiddush is over here. That's one possibility. Then he brings a second possibility. Rabbeinu David teretz the itzrech lemitnei v'chayavin alei mishum eishadish d'shmin the seifa the mumutim ayadah v'tzolamar the af beima im baal eishaner gaya daha beima. It's going to teach you when we say the arayot in the back half of this case that it's modified by the eishadish in the front end. Eishadish in the front end tells you all the normal arayot. The back end tells you don't think it's just arayot, but it's even behema. All the things that are mentioned in the parsha. How do I know that? Because I already got rid of eishadish. I talked about the main eishadish case. So now when I talk about kol arayot shebat Torah, I mean literally all the arayot that are mentioned in achrimot and kedoshim, including the possibility of behema. So here Tosafot is looking for nuance to understand or explain why eishadish is mentioned separately. One way he said is because of yavama. By the case of yavam, that this generates full ishut for the yavam. So that's one reason possibly. Or the other possibility is that the arayot that we're talking about later on are not just arayot with other people, but even with behemot. I mean, bestiality would also have the same status of arayot for the woman, and the animal would be killed because of this young girl. The Rashba actually suggests an answer based on what we finished off with the Gemara yesterday, that we have the pasuk of metu gam shnehem by eishadish. By eishadish, it has a requirement that both parties be put to death. And over here, where, since she is a minor, she won't be put to death, you would have a havamina that the din of eishadish may not apply to the man who perpetrates the crime. The answer in the end is, the kamash malon, that even in that case, we still say that she's considered to be an eishadish, and the man who perpetrates the crime with her will be put to death for that. So now the Gemara continues. Tashma. Kvar shalach Yochanan ben Bagbag, Eitzel Reb Yehuda ben Beteril and Itzivin. Shemati alecha, shata omer, I heard from you, I heard about you that you say, Arusah bat Yisrael ochele bitruma. Then an Arusah, who is a regular bat Yisrael, who marries a Kohen, she has kiddushin with the Kohen, she eats truma. Shalach lo, ta'i ata omer kein, and you don't agree with me? I mean, how could you not agree with me? Mukzgani becha, shata baki bechedre Torah. I heard that you are an expert in Torah, that you know Torah up and down, all around, cold. And of course, you must agree with me. The drosh b'kal v'chomer. It's a very straightforward kal v'chomer. First of all, it's a very interesting way, I mean, in turn to pressure someone to accept your position. He says to them, you are a genius in Torah, you know everything. How can you not come to the same conclusion that I came to? Then he says, well, it's a kal v'chomer. Which is interesting because a kal v'chomer is a matter of logic, not a matter of knowledge. So here he says, you know everything. And then he says, oh, it's a matter of logic of kal v'chomer. So how is it possible that he's saying that you have all this knowledge, how could you not make the Kal V'chomer? That seems to be a quantum leap in his capacities to also have svara, not just knowledge. So either you have to suggest that he assumed that the two were correlated, or the possibility that a Kal V'chomer still requires broad knowledge. Because a Kal V'chomer is a logical argument that can be upended if you know information that tells you something that is more chamur or more or problematic in the other case. So you'll need the broad a swath of knowledge in order to determine whether the Kal V'chomer is a good Kal V'chomer or not. Iata yodea, ma shivcha kananit, shem biata machilata b'truma. When it comes to a shivcha kananit, who belongs to a Kohen, who's entitled to eat truma as being the shivcha kananit of the Kohen, there, she, through biyah, cannot be acquired. Kaspa machilata b'truma. She's acquired for money, then when she is purchased, she becomes the kinyan kaspo of the Kohen, and she eats truma. So the only method or means by which a shivcha kananit becomes entitled to eat truma by the Kohen is if she is purchased, if she is bought with money, not if there is biyah. Biyah won't work because biyah doesn't do anything with a shivcha kananit. There is no biyah with a shivcha kananit. Rashi notes this already because there's no kiddushin with a shivcha kananit because they have a status of amah domeh lechamor, and there's no kiddushin with a kananit. If there's no kiddushin, then biyah has no impact whatsoever. Zo shebiyata machilata b'truma. Over here by the woman who he's marrying, the bat yisrael that he's marrying, where the biyah does grant her the right of truma, inudin shekaspa machilata b'truma, then certainly her kesef kiddushin should grant her the right of eating truma. Ava ma'aseh, what can I do? That is definitely the right Kal V'chomer, he says. Sharei amru chachamim. The only thing is that the chachamim said otherwise, which is ein arusa bat yisrael ocheleh b'truma ad shetikanes l'chupa. That arusa bat yisrael is not entitled to truma until she enters the chupa. So here is the statement. You have Rabbi Yochanan ben Bagbag sending over to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira from Netzivin. Listen, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, I hear you say that arusa bat yisrael should eat truma immediately from kiddushin v'erusin. He says, of course, wouldn't you say the same thing? It seems so obvious. It's a Kal V'chomer from Shivcha Kananit. Once you have the Kal V'chomer from Shivcha Kananit, it's obvious that Arusa Bat Yisrael should eat from Kesef through Kiddushin, but the Chachamim said she can't. So now you have to understand what the Kal V'chomer is and what exactly the context is. That's what Gemara says now, Heichidomi. Before you do that, Tosafot already raises the issue of how come this is a good Kal V'chomer. After he says, you know, you're so knowledgeable, you know everything, because that's what it says, this Kal V'chomer can be undermined by something that we said earlier in the Masechta, which is Yivama Tochiach. Yivama can prove over the Kal V'chomer wrong. Because the Yivama can be acquired through Bi'ah, but she cannot be acquired through Kesef. So you see that there's no correlation between the two items. Just because you can be acquired through Bi'ah doesn't automatically mean that you can be acquired through Kesef. Because we have a paradigm of Yivama where Bi'ah works and Kesef doesn't work. So Tosafot comes to an interesting conclusion over here. V'yesh lamar, dai Kal V'chomer eino kol kim gilui milta v'alma. This Kal V'chomer is not a real logical argument of a Kal V'chomer, rather a gilui milta. That Rusa mikre kinyan kaspo, to show you that in Rusa has a status of a kinyan kaspo, kamo shivcha. Just like a shivcha is called a kinyan kaspo, so too an arusa should gain the status of a kinyan kaspo. V'yesh lamar. And then he brings another possibility that to say, to maybe Yivama is not a disproof to this, because Ikla Mifrach, Malav Yivama, Shekein Ena Niknei Pekesef. Tomar B'Yisha, Sheniknei Pekesef. Dinu, Shetochal B'Truma, Yidei Kesef. So here you have a method for undoing that, or not having the Yivama ruin it, which is the Yivama, who only Bi'ah works, and Kesef doesn't work. So fine, Kesef won't entitle her to Truma. On the other hand, for the woman where we know Kesef works, we know that it's a vehicle. We're not trying to learn out that Kesef works as Kiddushin over here. We already know that Kesef works for Kiddushin. So now, if we establish the fact that by a Shivcha Kananit, Kesef gets her the right to Truma, Kesef should also get the woman the right to Truma. It has nothing to do with the Kal V'chomer to say that, well, if it works by Bi'ah, it works by Kesef to say that Kesef works. We know Kesef works. We just want to know what's the status of the woman. So what he's saying is that's what the Kal V'chomer tells us. The Kal V'chomer tells us that if by a Shivcha Kananit, Kesef gains her the status of Kinyan Kaspo, by a woman who's getting married, it should gain her the same status of Kinyan Kaspo. It should be no worse than a Shivcha Kananit, and Shirei should be deemed a Kinyan Kaspo and get the entitlement. So therefore, Yevama wouldn't undermine that, because Yevama has nothing to do with Kesef. Yevama just doesn't work with Kesef. Okay, so if it doesn't work with Kesef, it won't get you Kinyan Kaspo. But someone who does have a kinyan kasef, it should get you the status of kinyan kaspo. So Gemara says, Eichidami. What's the case here? If you're talking about a case, all right, the simple way to explain this means that she had bia and then chupa, and she had kesef and then chupa. What's the question here? In both those instances, everyone agrees that she's entitled to eat. If you had kesef kiddushin and then chupa, you're fully married. It's a fully consummated marriage. And of course, everybody would agree that this woman eats truma, because nobody's going to dissent in that case, because you have everything that you need. You have kesef, you have chupa, you have kiddushin, nisuin. Of course she's eating truma. So then why do you even need a kal v'chomer to teach you that? So now, bia yedei chupa presents a problem. How do you have bia yedei chupa? So again, the second statement, kesef yedei chupa, seems to be much easier to explain, which is, she had kesef kiddushin, and then she had chupa, meaning that she had bi'ah, or some sort of consummation of the marriage. But when you say bi'ah yedei chupa, what's the meaning of bi'ah yedei chupa? So Rashi says something very interesting over here. He says, bi'ah yedei chupa, inema bi'ah shalachar chupa. He says that bi'ah yedei chupa means bi'ah after chupa. B'nei l'fiminei kesef shechnisa achar kach lechupa. So Rashi translates the word ayedei differently in these two cases. He says, kesef ayedei chupa means kesef, and then chupa. Then, in the case where he says, bia ayidei chupa, then he says ayidei means achar. That bia means bia after chupa. So now you asked before, what's the meaning of chupa? So we've discussed this numerous times. The word chupa is never defined in the Gemara, clearly. So chupa can be any number of items, including bia, which is that some Rishonim believe that chupa is simply that the husband brings the woman into his house, and they live as husband and wife, that's chupa. Some suggest it just means yichud, that they are alone together, they're in a position of yichud, even though they never have bi'ah together, just being in yichud together is enough to call that to be chupa, and that's enough to be chupa. The other Rishonim say that you need bi'ah, bi'ah and chupa are synonymous, or there are others that suggest that chupa is where the husband brings her under the chupa that we make, or under the talit that they wear. Those are all forms or types of chupa. So we're not sure. The Rishonim give all different explanations. And again, the Gemara is never absolutely clear about what chupa is, and that's what leads to this uncertainty. But Rashi, when he says chupa yedei bia, is suggesting that chupa came first and then bia afterwards. So for Rashi, clearly it seems that chupa is not synonymous with bia, because he says you had chupa and then they had bia. So he took her into the house and then they had bia. So Rashi does two issues with Rashi's explanation. One is that, for him, chupa is then not synonymous with bi'ah, number one. And number two is he has a problem. He's translating the word ayyadeh differently in two items right in a row. He says one ayyadeh means after, and one ayyadeh means before. Which is that the first case means that bi'ah happened after the chupa, and the second case, the chupa happened after the kesef. Which means that they're translating them just the opposite. So most Rishonim believe that the case, what the Gemara is speaking about is here, is bi'ah ayyadeh chupa means the bi'ah served as the chupa as well, which would make life a lot easier then, because bi'ah yedei chupa means that you had nisuin because you had bi'ah that generated the kiddushin and the chupa happened simultaneously. For kesef sheyedei chupa, kesef yedei chupa means that you had kesef and then you had chupa because kesef won't generate chupa. And that's the way that they translate it. But either way, that cannot be the kava chomer that Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateira is making, because mechalachla. In this case, of course, with kesef and chupa, everybody's going to agree, after you have kiddushin and nisuin, that this woman eats truma. Ella, so what it must be? Bi'ah sheyedei chupa. Bekesef shelo yedei chupa. We're talking about a case of bi'ah that included chupa, and kesef that was not with chupa. So now Gemara says, how can you make a kal v'chomer now? You're suggesting now that you have bi'ah yedei chupa, which is that bi'ah would generate everything, meaning that bi'ah would generate both kiddushin and nisuin and the chupa on one shot. And then you have kesef without chupa. So I want to learn kesef without chupa from bi'ah with chupa. So Gemara says, how can you do that? In the case of bi'ah yedei chupa, you generated kiddushin and nisuin. By the case of kesef, you only generated kiddushin. So how can you learn a kal v'chomer and say, oh, if it works by kiddushin and nisuin, oh, so it should work by kiddushin alone? That can't be the case. El alav, what must be the answer here? Bibiyah shelo yedei chupa, v'kesef shelo yedei chupa. That both of these cases are cases of kiddushin alone, That means that he had biyah to generate kiddushin, and he had kesef to generate kiddushin. Just like by biyah, which was kiddushin, she eats truma, so too by kesef alone, she eats truma. That would be a good kal v'chomer. They'd be on parity in terms of their level of what they generated. Iyamar bishlama nisuin osa. If you say that biyah in one shot creates both kiddushin and nisuin, then all of this makes sense. Shumachi pshitale dalim ala biyah mikesef. That's why Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira is so certain that by biyah she eats truma, and then you make a kal v'chomer to kesef. If all biyah did was create erusin or kiddushin, then why is Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira certain that by biyah it generates the right to eat truma, and that he has to learn a kal v'chomer to kesef? How does he know that biyah does anything more than kesef? Both of them only generate kiddushin. They both generate kiddushin, you're at square one, which is how do you know that kiddushin generates the right to truma? What you must say is that biyah does more than kesef. What does biyah do more than kesef? It generates both kiddushin and nisuin. Since it generates both of them, then kiddushin ayidei biyah clearly entitles the woman to truma. So if that's the case, now you can make a kal v'chomer to the kiddushin of kesef that it should also generate it. Ela yamart, if you say kiddushin osa, all it does is create kiddushin. How come he's not certain by kesef whether it generates the right to truma, but by biyah? Of course it generates the right to truma. Why? They both only generate kiddushin. And then they're on the same level, they're on parity. If that's the case, then why is it so obvious that biyah creates the right to truma? So Tosafot asks your question. You asked it in a more straightforward manner, which is, if biyah generates kiddushin and nisuin, then it's not similar to kesef, which is only generating kiddushin. Tosafot brings up a mechanism by which you can undermine a kal v'chomer, which is dayo. Dayo says that you can only learn from the item that is the source what the source does. Meaning that if you're going to learn a kal v'chomer from biyah, then you can only say whatever biyah does and whatever mechanics biyah uses, that's what will be true in kesef. Well, biyah, according to this mechanics, creates both kiddushin and nisuin. That means that what you'd have to say here is, there's a need for both kiddushin and nisuin here when you make the kal v'chomer. So you make the kal v'chomer with the kesef, you'll say, yeah, when you have kesef that generates kiddushin and nisuin, it can do the same thing or the same function as biyah. But if it doesn't do that, then it doesn't have the power that is invested in the biyah because it doesn't reach the same levels as biyah. That's what Tosfot asks. He says, Ve'im tomar nema dayo sovdina. Should say dayo. So V'deish lomar, Tosfot answers here, similar to what he said earlier in the Masechta, which is that this is the shita of Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon believes that if dayo, if you invoke the principle of dayo, it ruins the kal v'chomer. We don't invoke the principle of dayo. Dayo is only an overlay. Once you have a kal v'chomer, we overlay dayo to say, how far can this limud go? How far are we allowing you to learn from one item to the other? It'll be capped by the source, by the level of the source that'll cap it. But if I invoke dayo here, which is what's going to happen, you'll ruin the whole kal v'chomer. We don't invoke that principle. So that would be the case. But ain't no chanami. What Tosfot is agreeing is, yes, there's a problem here, some logical break here, which is that you're learning from something that involves kiddushin and nisuin to something that only has kiddushin associated with it. For Rabbeinu Shimshon Mikutzi Teretz, Delo Aminin Dayo, Elahecha Debay Lameimar Din Chadash. That the only time we invoke the principle of Dayo is if you want to say some new din. If you're trying to create something that didn't exist before, some new din that's not there at all. Over here he says that the kal v'chomer is different. When do we say dayo is when you're invoking a kal v'chomer to learn a completely new din. Over here the kal v'chomer is not teaching you a new din. It's actually a giloy milta, similar to what Tosfot said above. It's saying to you that this fits into the category that the Torah calls kinyan kaspo. The category of kinyan kaspo already exists. Anybody who's kinyan kesef gets to eat truma. What's defined as kinyan kesef? That's what the Gemara is trying to do. So the kal v'chomer is not telling you, okay, kesef kiddushin is equal to biyat kiddushin. It's simply saying that if kiddushin can generate kinyan kaspo, that works by biyah, then it also works by kesef. And not to say to you that kesef is equated to biyah in terms of kiddushin, but simply to say that if Kiddushin is sufficient grounds to generate a Kinyan Kaspo, then by Kesef it should be the same thing. So it's more of a Gilui Milta than a Kal V'chomer, and then you don't apply a Dayo. And that's why you won't have that question. Others suggest that you don't apply the din of Dayo here because Chupa is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah. So we wouldn't use it as a vehicle for undermining the Kal V'chomer when we're dealing with issues that are explicit in the Torah to bring something that's not explicit in the Torah, Chupa. And therefore, chupa would not be considered a pircha, or breaking of the Kal V'chomer, because of dayo. Alright, so now, the Gemara says, seemingly, that it's clear here, based on this Kal V'chomer that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira is making, biya must generate not only kiddushin, but also nisuin. And that's why the kiddushin through biya obviously entitles her to truma. And then we have the Kal V'chomer that tells you that kesef kiddushin should also entitle her to truma. So now the Gemara says, no, Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Yitzchak, lo'ol ha'meim alecha, b'biyah she'yadei chupa. Now we're talking about here a case of biyah yadei chupa, b'kesef shelo ha'yadei chupa, and money that didn't generate chupa. So now we said that was our second option. The first option was that they were both ha'yadei chupa, and then you had kiddushin and nisuin in both cases. The Gemara says that's so obvious because everybody would agree there that they eat chuma. So the next stage of the Gemara was, no, it was a case where she had kiddushin yidei chupa, biya yidei chupa. They had biya of kiddushin plus chupa, but kesef was without chupa. So there the Gemara said, how could you draw a Kal V'chomer when you're dealing with different levels of acquisition of the woman? Which is, in one case you're talking about biya of kiddushin plus chupa, and then you're talking about kesef, which is only kiddushin. How can you make a Kal V'chomer from one to the other? So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says you could. How can you make a Kal V'chomer from two to one, meaning that you have kiddushin and nisuin or chupa in one case, and you only have kiddushin in the other case? Kal V'chomer mi'ayite. He says, I can still show you there is a Kal V'chomer here, which is v'hachi shalachle. This is what he says to him. Uma shifcha knanit she'im bi'ata machilata b'tshuma. The shifcha knanit, where bi'ah does not entitle her to tshuma. Afilu ayidei chupa. Even with chupa. Meaning that bi'a and chupa with the shiva chanani does absolutely nothing. Yet, kaspa machilata below chupa. If she has kesef without a chupa, it works. And she's acquired and she's kinyan kaspo. Zo, by a woman, she bi'ata machilata b'chuma yidei chupa, where bi'a with chupa does entitle her to chuma, inudin she kaspa machilata b'chuma below chupa. So to her kesef should work to feed her chuma without a chupa. Meaning that the case of Shifcha Kananit is not a case where you have Kesef and then Chupa. It's a case where you have just plain Kesef. So what the Kal V'chomer is now going to Rav Nachman Yitzchak is simply this. A Shifcha Kananit has entitlement to Truma with simply Kesef. By the case of Bia, she can't get to Truma no matter what she does. Bia, Chupa, everything, nothing works there. A woman who's getting married, where Bia and Chupa entitle her to Truma, which the Shifcha Kananit doesn't have, then certainly Kesef alone should generate the right to truma similar to the way that it does by the shifcha knanit. So the Kal V'chomer is not a Kal V'chomer internally within the woman. Before we read the Kal V'chomer like this, that if this is true by bia for the woman, then it should be true by her kesef. No, we're saying that this is the Kal V'chomer. The Kal V'chomer is saying that if you line up shifcha knanit and a woman getting married, woman getting married has this right over the shifcha knanit, which is bia and chupa, get her to truma. The shifcha knanit never has that vehicle. Shifcha Kananit has the vehicle of Kesef, then certainly the woman should have that same vehicle of Kesef that the Shifcha Kananit has. What's that vehicle of Kesef the Shifcha Kananit has? It's just plain Kesef. Kesef without Chupa. Inudin shekaspa machilata b'chuma below Chupa. Aval ma'aseh? What can I do? Shereach amru chachamim inurusah batisol chale b'chuma. The Kal V'chomer works. She should be entitled to Chuma from just Kesef Kiddushin. But the Chamim said no. Ad shetikanes the Chupa mishum de'ula. Until she enters in the chupa, no eating of shuma because of ula. Ula we already bumped into earlier in the Masech, the Daf Hei, and other places in Shas. Ula says because we're afraid she's going to be machil shuma, lavia leachia, that she's going to give the shuma. She's living in her father's house still when she has kiddushin. She has yet to be brought to her husband's house. If he gives her shuma at that point in time, she's a nice girl, a good girl. She shares with their family. If she shares with her family, you have a problem. Because she's entitled to eat truma, but the rest of the family is not entitled to truma. Ben Bagbag, who was surprised by Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira's Kal V'chomer, why does he not like the Kal V'chomer of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira? It's gabe shifcha knanit, lo shier b'kinyana. The answer is that by Shiva Kranit, Kesef is the vehicle for our acquisition, but it's also the only vehicle of acquisition. There's nothing else to be done. Once you've acquired the Shiva Kranit through money, you've completely acquired the Shiva Kranit. There's nothing left to do. Over here by the woman, when he has Kesef Kiddushin, that's not the completion of the process of quote-unquote acquiring the woman. It is Kesef Kiddushin plus Chupa. So that means there is a residual in his acquisition of this woman. If that's the case, the two are not comparable. Shiva Kranit, the reason Kesef works is because Kesef alone generates the Kinyan. Kesef by the woman getting married doesn't work, not because it shouldn't work because it's equated to Shiva Kranit, but because a woman is acquired in a different manner. Woman requires both Kesef Kiddushin and Chupa. That means once you only have Kesef Kiddushin, you have not completed the Kinyan, and you only have like a half Kinyan on the woman. If you have a half Kinyan on the woman, it's not equated to Shiva Kranit, where you have 100% Kinyan on the woman, and that's for the reason maybe it shouldn't work, or the Kal v'chomer is no good. Ravina Amar, Ravina says, Mido raito mifshat pshitole do'achla. You know, in Ochanami, Mido raito, everybody agrees that from the time of Erusin, the woman does eat truma. Umidrabananu the shalachle. That it's only midrabanan that he asked him about it. Which means that even Ben Bagbag agrees that midoraita, a woman who has kiddushin is considered to be kinyan kaspo, and she should be entitled to eat truma. That there's no controversy about. Whereas midindrabanan, we say that she cannot eat truma because of ula. So what now Ravina is suggesting is that was Ben Bagbag's question. When he said to Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira, I hear that you allow an arusa to eat from truma, it sounds like you think even midrabanan, she should eat truma. Because midoraita, everybody agrees that she's entitled to truma in arusa. So here he says, midoraita mishab shitala da'achla, umidrabanu de shalachle, ve'ocha achi shalachle. This is what Ben Bagbag, Rabbi Yochanan ben Bagbag, sent to Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira, which is, shamati alecha, and you don't worry about simpon. So now the Gemara gets a little more complex, which is, the Gemara Ketubot is speaking about the reason why an Arusa Bat Yisrael cannot eat truma, even though technically she's entitled to eat truma. She is Kinyan Kaspo of the Kohen. She should have the right to eat truma from the moment of Kiddushin. But the Chachamim said she has to wait until Nisuin. Why do you have to wait till Nisuin? There, the Gemara brings two possible reasons. We've discussed now, until now, Ula's reason. Ula's reason is because she'll share with her family, because she lives with her family during that period of time between Kiddushin and Nisuin. Therefore, we don't give her Truma, because she'll share with her family. The other reason is what's called Simpon. Simpon, as Rashi says over here, Simpon is called Davar Mevatel Davar. Anything that annuls or nullifies another thing is called a Simpon. So, for instance, a receipt for the payment of a loan, a receipt for the payment of a ketubah is a simpon, because it nullifies the power of the shtar. The shtar before was effective. Now that you have a receipt, you can say that that shtar is no longer affected. It's called a simpon. By a woman, a simpon is a mum. She has some sort of blemish in her that would vacate the kiddushin that would happen, meaning that it would be considered to be a mekach taut. So what we're afraid of is this man will halakhically get engaged to the woman. She'll start to eat shuma because she's kinyan kaspo. It'll get to the chuppah and the nisuin, and then he finally discovers that this woman has these mumim. When he discovers this woman has these mumim, he's going to be mevatel the marriage lemafreya. He's going to say this is all a mekach taut. It's a mekach taut. She was not entitled to eat shuma all that time because she wasn't kinyan kaspo. The kiddushin never happened because they're vacated by the fact that there was a mekach taut. So because of that, it's called simpon. So what Rabbi Yochanan ben Bagbag says to Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira is, I hear that midoraita, when woman eats me zman kiddushin, when she's in arusa truma. I agree with that. Everyone agrees with that. But I hear that you don't worry about simpon. You don't worry about mumim. The possibility that this man, when he gets to the case of nisua, is going to find something wrong, and then they're going to, mamafreya, undermine or unravel the kiddushin, and that was the problem. Shalachlei, va'ata yata omer kein. He says, wait a minute, you don't agree with me that simpon is not an issue? I hear about you that you're a superstar in Torah and to make Kal v'chomers. Don't you know? Where Bia does not work in order to generate the right to Truma, Kaspa Machilata B'Truma, her Kesef does. Lo chayshin on the simpon. And nobody worries about simpon by the shivcha knanit. Why don't you say the same thing by the shivcha knanit? He'll discover something wrong with her, and that'll undermine the whole sale, and then they'll have simpon, and then she shouldn't be eating truma, because he can undermine it. Zo should be atama chilata b'truma, by the woman that he marries, where bi'ah would give her the right to truma, inu din shekaspa machilata b'truma, lo nechish the simpon. Shouldn't it be that the monetary acquisition of the woman, meaning kiddushin, should give you the right to, give her the right to eat truma, and we shouldn't worry about simpon. Just like we don't worry about simpon by the shifka kranit, we shouldn't worry about simpon by the isha, by kiddushin. And now in the explanation of zo should be atam achilata b'truma, Rashi says that we're talking about a nisua. Because as Rashi says over here, b'nisek modeh, t'lo chashin in the simpon. Everybody agrees by nisua that simpon is not an issue. Because a person only drinks from his cup if he checks it out. And if you already have nisuin, post-nisuin, there is no such thing as simpon. Because once he reaches the point of nisuin, we assume that he knows all the information. And whatever is there, he's accepted. And therefore, simpon is no longer an issue at all. Tosafot has issue with that explanation of Rashi, because over here, the whole point is that we're trying to prove that Arusa doesn't have the issue of simpon, or shouldn't have the issue of simpon. So then why are you going to nisua to bring that point around? So therefore, Tosafot says, v'yesh le'ashev, d'hachi kamar. Ki de'echid b'nisuin pshitale da'achla, just like by nisuin, it's obvious to everyone that she eats. Dukulei ha'mamoda, de'en adam shuteh b'ko, selim k'n b'odko. Person only drinks from a cup if he's checked it out. Hachaname enu ba'la, elim k'n b'odka. We're going to extrapolate that din to kiddushin ayudei biyah. And a person doesn't make his bi'ah into a bi'at znut, or in other words, what Tosfot says is that what bi'ah does is creates the intimacy by which an individual checks the woman out. So by nisuin, that is true. And if you're going to use bi'ah as the vehicle for kiddushin, the same would be true there, and we would assume that he's checked her out. Because the person doesn't want to make his bi'ah into a bi'at znut, just like he doesn't, when he has nisuin, want to make his nisuin for not. And therefore, whatever he is done is checked, whatever issues have been already vetted, and he has accepted whatever is that's there. So therefore, it's an extrapolation from what Rashi says by Nisua to Arusa, and saying that Bi'ah has this unique quality to it because of its intimate nature, that there must have been a checking out of the woman, and therefore anything that is there is already accepted, and there shouldn't be simpon. On the other hand, the Rav Rabbeinu Meir, which very likely is the son-in-law of Rashi over here, says that the explanation is that just like by a shifa knanit, when she's entitled to eat truma because of the kesef, she eats both on a doraita level and even on a rabbinic level. So too, when it comes to a woman, when she has nisuin through bi'ah, she eats on a doraita level, then certainly her kesef should entitle her to eat both on a doraita level and a derabbanan level. And that's the nature of the limud over here. Because the bi'ah by a shivka knanit doesn't entitle her to eat truma whatsoever. Not min haTorah, not even midrabbanan. And so the woman who does have entitlement to eat truma midoraita, then certainly her kesef should allow her, entitle her to eat not only min haTorah, but even midrabbanan. And there should be no issue of simpon over here. And therefore, you could be talking about a case of bi'ah without chupa. You don't have to be talking about nisuin. Because what we're saying is that the shifa karanit, bi'ah does nothing. Bi'ah by a woman entitles her midoraita to truma. Kesef by the shifa karanit entitles her both doraita and even midrabanan. There's no block midrabanan and she can eat truma. Then certainly by the woman who's getting married, the kesef should entitle her midoraita, which we know it does. But it should also entitle her midrabanan, and there should be no stopping midrabanan, if you're eating truma over here, just like there's no stop by the shifka knanit. In that case, we're talking about bi'ah, shayud lo yidei chupa, according to the Rabbeinu Meir. So over here, you have three different ways to learn out what it means here, that zo bi'ata machilata b'truma. Rashi says it's talking about a nisua. Tosafot, in defense of Rashi, brings that it really means that we extrapolate from nisua to the bi'ah of an arusa. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Meir says that we're talking about regular bi'ah, and all we're saying is that bi'ah doraita works over here for kiddushin. Doesn't work at all by shifka knanit. And therefore, by the case of kesef, by the shifka knanit, which works totally to give her free rein in eating truma, should do the same thing by the woman over here. And we're talking about a case of zo machilata truma, is a case of bi'ah of kiddushin, which entitles her midoraita to eat truma. Aval Lamase, what am I gonna do? Sharei Amrucha Kamim Arusa Batisarli no Khala Bitruma Achitikanes the Khupa Mishum Ula. So he says, what can I do? Because there's another reason why you can't have Truma from the time of Erusin until the time of Nisuin. Not just because of Simpon, but because of Ula's reason. Ula's reason is that maybe she'll give to her family or she'll share with her family. And therefore, we have to wait until the chuppah. So he says, I was overridden by the fact that the Chachamim say that there's this other problem. So now the Gemara says, Ben Bagbag, why didn't Ben Bagbag accept the Yudim and Teres Kavachomer? That's for you, what your question is, which is, Simpon ba'avadim lately. Simpon ba'avadim is very different than Simpon by a woman. You're saying here, by Shifu Kranit, once he acquires her, that's the end of the acquisition. So Simpon is an immediate discernment. Does she have anything wrong with her? She doesn't. Does she not have anything wrong with her? By the woman, you have Kiddushin, and then only Nisuin later on. Nisuin, it allows for the intimacy, and that intimacy causes the discovery of the Mumim. And the discovery of Mumim by a woman is very different than the discovery of Mumim by a Shifcha Knanit, because in Mumim Shibigaluihu, if this Shifcha Knanit has visible Mumim, Hakachazilei, then he sees them. If he sees them and then he acquires her anyway, that means that he's accepted. Whatever he sees, he's getting because he can see it. If it's visible, then nobody's hiding anything from him and he knows about it. That's true by the woman and that's true by the Shifcha Knanit as well. Imishum mumim shebeseiter, if it's mumim that are covered, and these are areas that are not visible to him, are not accessible to him, and therefore he doesn't know about it, my nafkale mine. Why does he care if the Shifcha Knanit has mumim? I mean, if she has mumim beseiter, things that are not visible mumim, those are things that detract from her beauty, but they're not things that detract from her ability to work. If that's the case, what does he care? He wants her to do the work. If she can function and do the work that she's supposed to do, even though she's got this terrible scar across her body, or she has something that would make her unattractive to this individual, why should it matter? He's acquiring her for her work, not for her beauty. So the Ramban asks you a question, which is, there's certain mumim, or chalayim, sicknesses that are also beseiter, and he can't discover them. The Ramban answer is similar to what I'm suggesting to you, which is, number one, some of these things become obvious from the individual beforehand, meaning you can see them, or you can notice them, and the other is have a kol, that these are things that are well known or become publicly known because there are unusual factors about this individual. And therefore, they are well-known pieces of information. And if they are rarer or circumstances, as we're going to see further on in the Gemara, the Balei HaTosafot believe, or the Rabbeinu Tam believes, even though there is Simpon in those cases, we don't call that Simpon Bavadim, because these are such rare occurrences of this case of Simpon. So now Gemara says, Loichbadle, Nimtza Ganavo Kovyustus, this is found to be a thief, or a Kovyustus. Now Rashi translates Kovyustus over here as Gonev Nefesho, the kidnapper. Tosavot brings the Rabbeinu Chananel, who says that a kovyustos is a mesachek bekubio, is a gambler. So if he's a ganav or a gambler, so now the reason that these individuals are problematic is they're going to steal. That's going to cause problems for the Baal, either because he's going to steal from the owner, or he's going to steal from other people, and it's going to cause the owner problems because this guy's a thief. So now if he's a thief, or a kovyustos, or a kidnapper, then what do you say here? Higio, he got what he should have expected. Why? Because Rov Avadim are involved in these items. Rov Avadim are thieves. That's what we know from the Mishnah and Avot. Marbe Avadim, Marbe Gozel. That when you have a lot of Avadim, you have a lot of theft. I mean, they are engaged in theft. That is their general MO. That's the way that Avadim act. So now, in that case, Kuvyustus being a kidnapper seems to be very extreme versus the case of theft. It's one thing to expect that an Eved is going to be a thief. So another thing to expect that he's going to be a kidnapper. A kidnapper is a serious offense where death penalty is involved. So that's why the Rabbeinu Chananel make more sense that they're involved in gambling. And that when they're involved in gambling, they are wanted men because they borrow money. Or they're loan sharks that are looking for them. So that's why it's problematic. So, but there, higio, because that's something you can expect. Avadim engage in these activities. And if you find out that he has one of these, quote unquote, mumim, he should have expected it. It's nothing out of the ordinary. Mayamart, listim mizuyan. So we're going to say, what is it? They're armed robbers. He finds out that this guy was a hijacker. He was an armed robber. O nichtav b'malchut. Or he is chayav mita by the king. He's wanted by the government for the death penalty. So those are the two cases where you don't generally expect the Avadim to be involved in those types of things. And if you get them, they really should be a mekach tot. Where it says, hanu kala idlahu. Those are things that are well known. Meaning that if someone is wanted by the government for the death penalty, or he's a marauder of some sort, he is a hijacker, people know or have those reputations become well known or publicized. And Rashi claims over here, Savar v'kibel. He knew about it and he accepted it. Meaning that these are public information. This is well known by the public. It's as if you can look it up in the registry and you see this information. That means that he accepted it. With all those rumors percolating or the well-known information about these guys, he still buys them. Then he accepted that he was okay with it. Tosafot disagrees with Rashi, disagrees here and other places in Shas. He says that that's not the meaning of Savar v'kabal over here, that Kala Idlahu. Kala Idlahu means that generally these are well-known items. And therefore, the likelihood that they create a simpon is very low. Because simpon means it was something you didn't know before, and you found about after the fact. The likelihood that you find out that they were armed robbers, or they were wanted by the government for death penalty after the fact, that type of situation is so rare. Why? Because Kala Idlahu, these are public issues. And since they're public issues, everybody knows about them. So if you find out about it after the fact, that's an unusual case. But the Rabbeinu Tam says, the Tosafot says, that if you find out about it after the fact, it would be simpon and it would unwind the transaction. Though the Rabbeinu Eliyahu does support Rashi's explanation here of Kala Idlahu by saying that it depends on whether the lokeach, the purchaser, has already given over the money or not. If he's paid already, then he cannot reverse the transaction because by paying, he was savar v'kabal. He already accepted it, and we assume that he did the checks that he needed to do. On the other hand, if he has yet to pay the money, then he can reverse the transaction because there's no savar v'kibel in that case because he didn't pay yet for the item. It basically becomes a motzi mechavero lavaraya because whoever's mukzak in the money has the upper hand. If the buyer still has the money, then he has the upper hand, he can unwind the transaction. On the other hand, if the seller already has the money, then the buyer has to prove that the information wasn't kali lahu, and we assume savar v'kibel that he already accepted whatever was there and he knew about it, and he cannot reverse the transaction. So as opposed to Rashi, who says that if you find out about it, the fact it's too bad, because you should have known about it, these are public issues, and therefore you accepted it. And you accepted it, you can't reverse the transaction. Vayi Tosafot says, all this says is that since they're normally public, it's unusual that you would find out this information after the fact. It's so unusual that we call it as if there's no simpon by Amadim. There's no such thing as finding out something after the fact by an Eved that would unwind the situation. If it's a visible issue, you knew about it. If it's an invisible issue, it doesn't affect their work ability, and so therefore there's no reason to turn them away. If it's Gneva or Kufustus, that's something you should have known about, because that's the normal way that Avadim act. It's one of these more serious offenses? That is an issue that's normally public. So the likelihood that you don't know about it beforehand is so rare or so unlikely that we don't worry about it. If you do find out about it after the fact and you didn't know before, you would have a right to unwind the transaction. But to call that simpon babadim, that's not a case. It's so rare that we would not call that simpon babadim. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Bagbag's response is. You're trying to compare two different issues. You're trying to compare a woman to an shifcha kananit. A shifcha kananit, simpon doesn't exist at all. By a woman, simpon exists because when it comes to issues that are covered up, mumim that are covered up, there's a serious issue because you don't get married to a woman simply because she can do whatever she can do. You also want to be attracted to the woman. And if he discovers mumim that are covered up after the fact that make her repulsive to him or it's unacceptable to him in that way, that is simpon. So the simpon of a woman is very different than a simpon of shifcha knanit. And for that reason, I don't see how you can make the comparison or parallel the case of kesef of the shifcha knanit to the kesef of the woman. And simpon should unwind in both of these cases. Mechte. Let's hear. Ben Lamar. Whether according to Rab Yochanan ben Bagbag, who says that the reason we don't allow the woman to eat truma from kiddushin until the time of nisuin is because of simpon, or whether according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, that the reason we don't allow you to eat truma from the time of kiddushin till the time of nisuin is because of ula that maybe you'll share with others, lo achla, she doesn't eat. My benayu, what's the napka mina between those two reasons? Where it says, ike benayu, kibel, masar, valach. There are three nafkaminot according to Rashi, two nafkaminot according to Tosafot. Rashi says the first nafkaminot is kibel. If he accepted, Meaning that he said, I'll take her as she is. I accept whatever she is, whatever mumim, I accept them. Then in that case, if it's because of simpon, then we would let her eat truma, because there's going to be no unwinding of this marriage. There's going to be no vacating of the kiddushin, because he accepted it. At the time of kiddushin, he says, whatever she is, and I accept her. That means that he doesn't have a right later on to call it a mekach ta'ot. On the other hand, for the worry about ula, where she'll feed it to her brothers and sisters, that worry still exists, even if he accepted her as she is, because she's living in her parents' house, and the chuma that he gives to her will be shared with everybody she lives with. So there's one nafkamina between them. Masar alach, Rashi says, there are cases like this. Masar av, the shluchei abau, that the father gave her over to the shluchim of the baal. Oh, shalchu shluchei av im shluchei abau. Shluchei av went with the shluchei abau. Va'oda baderech, and she's still on the way. Mishum simpon ika, mishum shema tashke leka. V'letnehu l'achia l'achuta gava. In those cases, the issue of simpon still exists because she is traveling. The husband has yet to meet her and have that intimacy with her to discover whatever mumim are possibly there. So she shouldn't be able to eat chuma because it still could be unwound. On the other hand, with the guards still giving or sharing with those people that are around her, her family's not with her anymore. She's now gone with the shlichim and she's not living with her family. If you give her chuma now, she's not going to share with anybody else. She's going to eat it by herself. And we're not worried about giving it to the father either because the father is aware of the issue and won't eat it, or because he's not at home, and so then he won't eat it, or because the shluchei abal are there and they'll remind him that he's not allowed to partake in the chuma. Tosafot, more extensively in other places, but also over here, it says that he disagrees with it. One of the reasons is that why don't you say she'll share it with the shlichim that she's with? Just like she shares with her family, she's a nice girl, she'll share with the people who are accompanying her. Why wouldn't she share with their chaperones? So you should have the same problem over there. As well as the fact that Tosfot over here says, V'kash, the mashma ocha, the masul l'shluchei abal, chashin in the simpon. That over here it sounds like when you give them over to the shluchei abal, we still worry about simpon. Yet, in the Gemara and Ketubot, we learn together that once you give over the woman to the shluchei abal, that is a full-fledged misira, because we assume that the shluchei abal check her out or make sure that she has no mumim. Since the shluchei abal checked that out, it's as if the issue of simpon is gone. And the issue of simpon goes by the wayside at that point in time. But the Tosafot and Ketubot says that all three of these cases are a case where there's no simpon, but there is an issue of ula, because maybe she'll give to her father, maybe she'll give to the other parties that are there. In all these cases, the issue of simpon goes away because the shluchei abal do the checking out, or because the husband accepted it. And in all those cases, simpon is gone, and the sharing is the issue. Over here, Tosafot says, "V'nira lefareish the masar v'alach chada miltihi." Says that masar v'alach are not two different cases of nafkaminot, but one case. And the case is v'achi perusho masar av the shluchei abal v'alach kamhu imahem. That the father gave it over to the shluchei abal, but then he accompanied them. Hilka chayshin on the simpon. There, we still worry about simpon. Dazlo bat kinen la ashite bebeito. Because he doesn't check her out till he gets to the house, because the father is still accompanying her the whole way. On the other hand, in the case where the father does not go with them, then we assume that the shluchei abal check her out at the time that they're being handed over, and then simpon goes away at that moment. But right over here, the case is a case where that the father is accompanying the shluchei abal. So that means that if mishum simpon, there still is. So no, maybe not worry about ula, because her brothers and sisters are not with us. Only her father, only her brothers and sisters. So maybe over there, because the shluchei abal are there, she won't share it with the other parties. And that's what Tosafot says is the nafkamina over here, which is simpon doesn't go away until she reaches the house of the husband. But ula might go away right away because her family is not with her. It's just her father that is accompanying her here, or the shluchei av that are accompanying her, and maybe that's enough to say that ula doesn't apply. So therefore, here Tosafot says that the case of masar v'alach is one big case, and simpon is still on the table, but the issue of sharing is not here, or not a problem, and therefore we're worried about simpon and not about ula. The Raivod has an unusual explanation, which is that it's all one case. Case where Shekibel, the father, accepted kiddushin, he gave him over then to the shluchei abal, and then left, balach lo, and then he left. So then there's only a problem of simpon, no problem of shemet tishke. And there is only one case, similar to the perush that the Tosafot gave on the latter two cases, because he just changes the kibel, and instead of being kibel alav et amumim to kibel kiddushin. But the Masar Valach, he's not exactly like Tosafot, but similar to Tosafot, where he says that the issue of Shemet Ishke is gone, but the issue of Simpon remains outstanding. Now, Tosafot does ask a serious issue over here. He says that our Gemara here says that Eino Ochel B'Trumah Ad Shetikanes L'Chupah, that she's not entitled to eat Trumah until she gets into the Chupah. If you look back in the Mishnayot and Ketubot, there was what's called the Mishnah Rishona and the Mishnah Achrona, as to when a woman became entitled to eat Trumah. So everybody agrees, because whatever reason, she doesn't eat it, it was sin only at the time of Nisuin. When is the trigger for Nisuin? So the Mishnah Rishona says that after 12 months, if he doesn't marry her, then she's automatically entitled to Truma. Meaning that since she has Erusin, and Erusin midoraita entitled her to Truma, the Chachamim say, wait until Nisuin. What does that mean, wait until Nisuin? So the Mishnah Rishona said, just wait 12 months to the time period where he should have married her. At that point, she becomes entitled to Truma, and she can eat Truma from that point forward, because he is Chayav in Mizonot. He has to now provide her Mizonot, because he's gone over the period of time which she's entitled to wait to bring her into Nisuin. The Mishnah Achrona says, no, that until she's actually entered into the chuppah, then we don't allow you to eat truma. Even if he crosses over that 12-month threshold, still, until he brings it into the chuppah, she can't eat truma. So our Gemara here sounds like the Mishnah Achrona, which says that ad shetikanes the chuppah, she's not entitled to eat truma. Now, why is it that we have to wait until the chuppah? So Tosafot says over there that that's everybody agrees there. Mode the kula the time of Mishum Simpon. Everybody agrees in the Mishnah Achrona the problem is Simpon, because once she reaches the threshold of 12 months, and now she's going to eat Truma, technically, according to Mishnah Rishona, they would set her aside a place to eat, because now she really should be with her husband, and he's giving her Mizonot. So because of that, he would set aside a place. He doesn't want the family eating the Mizonot. He wants this woman eating the Mizonot. So for that reason, the problem of Ula goes away at that point. The only issue we have is, why do we want to wait till the Chuppah? Because of Simpon. After the 12 months, another month later, he marries her and then finds a mom, he's going to vacate the whole Kiddushin, and it's going to be a problem all along. So Mishnah Achrona says, wait until Chuppah. But the waiting until Chuppah is because of Simpon. It has nothing to do with Ula. So how come our Gemara over here says that Bat Yisrael eino ochel b'trumah ad shetikanes l'chuppah mishum d'ula? What do you mean? It has nothing to do with Ula. It has to do with Simpon. And so Tosafot is perplexed as to why the Gemara here seems to be taking up the position of the Mishnah Achrona, but says the reason why you don't eat is because of Ula. The reason you don't eat is because of Simpon. And everybody agrees, even Ula agrees, that the reason you have to wait until the Chuppah for the Mishnah Achrona is because of Simpon. So Tosafot gives two answers. One answer is that when the Gemara here says, Ad shetikanes the Chuppah means lav dafka. Doesn't literally mean until she reaches the Chuppah, but rather it means until she reaches the point in time where she should have entered the Chuppah, which just means after 12 months, and this is like the Mishnah Rishona. That's one answer that Tosafot says. Nevertheless, Tosafot then suggests a second answer, which is that Rav Moshe Mikutzi, the Rav Moshe Minervona, explains over here that even though the reason behind the Mishnah Achrona is Simpon, it's built on top of Ula. Meaning that the only reason that we worry about Simpon after the 12 months of the time of the Chuppah, in and of itself, Simpon wouldn't have been sufficient grounds to say that the woman shouldn't eat from the time of Kiddushin till Nisuin, because it's not such a common case. Most women don't have mumim, and even women who have small mumim, they're not enough usually to unwind the marriage. So Simpon by itself would not be enough reason to say that she shouldn't eat from the time of Erusin. But together with Ula's din, which Ula says, we're also afraid of the fact that she's going to feed her family, she's going to share with her family, those together give you enough reason to put a takana in place. So even if you believe Simpon is the reason, Simpon is built on top of Ula. Because once we have Ula's chashash is a real chashash, and that's a chashash with every woman. That's enough of a reason to put a takanat chachamim, exerat chachamim in place that she shouldn't eat from the time of Erusin until the time of Nisuin. Now, you want to extend that by Simpon? That's true, because from the time of the 12 months elapsed, so the time he has Nisuin, that will be because of Simpon. But even though that's because of Simpon, it's built on top of, or it's premised on the fact that Ula existed. Because if it was Simpon alone, we would never institute any takanot, or we'd never prevent the woman from eating Truma in the beginning, because it's such a rare case. It's such a miut that we wouldn't worry about it. So therefore, what the Rav Moshe Mikutzi is suggesting is that, even according to the Mishnah Achrona, Ula is important. Because Simpon is built on top of the Shita of Ula, and therefore even if the only problem is the problem of Simpon, that problem was only generated or has enough power because of Ula. Because of Ula together with Simpon, and that's what the Gemara means over here, actually, Tekhnes Tuchubah Mishum Ula, even according to the Mishnah Achrona, Ula is the basis for all Takanot that prevent the woman eating from the time they were sin to the time of Nisuin. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph.